when we keep coming back to this like coffee crisis, and you reference Ethiopia and the challenges of people like finding other things that can get them cash in the hand a bit easier than coffee, and coffee disappearing. And how do we keep it around? The way we keep it around, Lee, is that we change people's perception of what the value of it is in the first place. How special of a beverage is it?
You mean the
And
consumer?
yeah, and I guess by that I mean I'm not saying it should all be this crazy price, but I'm saying it can be this crazy price. It can be something really special. And it's more understanding that there is more to coffee than it being roasted dark, having sugar added to it and milk poured over it.
This episode is proudly brought to you by Mapper Forward's workshop, It's Time to Become a Coffee Consultant. Learn how to diversify your revenue streams and create freedom from your day job while saying goodbye to that alarm clock forever by becoming a consultant within the coffee industry or directly to consumers who have shifted towards home brewing and home roasting. Protect your income from challenging times in the coffee value chain by taking this course today. Go to mapperforward.coffee/workshops or click the link in the show notes for details. Welcome to the Daily Coffee Pro by Mapper Forward, friends. I'm your host, Lee Safar, and this is episode 4 of a 5-part series. And we are talking about how did we get here and where are we going? We've got Nolan Hurty from Proud Mary's and Auntie Peg's. And folks, before we dive into this episode of the podcast, I just want to remind you that if you want to support this podcast, the number one way that you can do that is to share the podcast with your colleagues and your coffee curious friends. That's really the best way at the moment that you can help the podcast. If you have done that and you would like to find other ways to support the podcast, supporting us on Patreon or becoming a paid member of our YouTube channel is another way that you can support that. It means that you end up getting access to the episodes before everybody else does. And yeah, you end up making sure that this podcast never ends up with sponsors that are from equipment manufacturing companies or from, you know, big corporates or anything like that. We will never do that. But it's just a way that you guys can help out the podcast. So I just wanted to mention that. Now, Nolan, we're talking about the value proposition of specialty coffee businesses. And I want to talk about the customer. And where I want to start this conversation is with a $100 cup of coffee. Prouds has done that many times over the years. Maybe not $100, but definitely more than the $5 or
$6. We've pushed the boundaries of what we could sell coffee for. I haven't done the $100 cup that many times, to be fair. Last year, we did release like a $150 cup.
Yep.
$200 Australian, actually, $150 US. And then this year, we had $50, $60 cup, and then more recently, $100 cup.
Right.
Back in the day, like I think back in 2012, just going a fair way back, we had a $30 cup.
And I bet that was at the time.
That was the most expensive coffee in history from Colombia at the time. It was a Colombian coffee. It's no longer the price tag, but it was $130 US dollars per pound, which broke the record for Colombia. And I mean, things have changed, but it's just, I guess cool to be a part of pushing and challenging that ceiling of what's coffee worth? Like, how valuable is it? Your questions around consumer.
Now, yeah. Right. So when we look at the role the consumer is playing in this crisis, and when we look at the cost of living crisis and a cup of coffee that's $100 a cup or even $30 a cup, right? As we look at the value proposition of businesses surviving and we anticipate that we are entering a period where businesses that are zombie businesses, for anyone who doesn't know what a zombie business is, that's an actual technical term. It's a business that is like the living dead, right? They operate month to month. They don't have any cash flow left over. They really should be going out of business. And once they're squeezed, they're gone. We are entering a period, which I thought would have happened during the pandemic, actually, but because there was so much stimulus money, it didn't end up eventuating to the extent that it needed to. But this period should start to help some of those zombie businesses close. The consumer is playing a different role than what it historically has, because the consumer is really experiencing a level of tightness that it hasn't for a long time. At the same time that we have market saturation and we have our supply chain being squeezed and we have debt all the way from the producer to the consumer. We have a very unique situation right now with a lot of pent-up energy in it that needs to figure our way out. In your mind, how does the business model that you've got, being, in my mind, one of the definitions of what specialty coffee should be aspiring to, what do you think happens to that business model, or what happens to the consumer in that business model?
I mean, one thing that's going through my mind on this kind of topic is how in the palm of my hand,
days, no one's holding his phone.
I can order whatever I want, whenever I want. I don't have to leave my house. Everything can come to me from every industry. It's kind of like pretty wild that I can be as recluse as I want and get all these things, and including some of the like fine dining restaurants, I could have, you know, some things delivered. However, I feel like I'm missing something, right? Like if that's everything's just coming to my house, whatever I could need. Piece that's missing is that human component and experience and this connection with people. And so I think more and more we're going to value having a community, having an experience in the community, being seen in the community, being a part of something. And I think it's like, you know, coffee houses always have been this special place for community.
Do you really think that's going to continue to happen?
Like coffee shops and...
Yeah, and people wanting that connection in coffee shops.
Yeah,
and people wanting that connection with coffee.
I think we're going to be starved of it, because I think, like, we will, like, ultimately, it's easier, right, to order on your phone. It's easier to stay at home. It's easier to... In a lot of cases, it's cheaper to order in clothes than to go out shopping. But it's a bit of a gamble. You don't know what it's going to look like till you get it, right? And quality could be not so great. Could also be part of the problem, you know, like maybe the fabrics, where they came from, how it was made.
Right.
But
with coffee, do you think that people are going to continue to, like, look, when I worked in the corporate world, it was like a great thing to have your coffee break and for everyone to walk down and get coffee.
Sure.
And then when I worked in, you know, my 15 years as a barista, still to this day, best fucking job I ever had. And I'm a genetic scientist, right?
Yeah.
Like the being a barista, what it was the best job I ever had because of the joy I watched what I do bring to people.
Yeah. 1,000%.
The cafe space is evolving, though.
Yeah.
And what I'm wondering is that in a place, in an industry where the consumer now has to reevaluate where their finances go, And
sure.
And in a political challenge. Climate, you're in the States with an election coming up this year, and with community being something that's very different today than it was pre-pandemic. All of these things. How does the consumer now see a specialty coffee shop?
Yeah.
Do they care enough?
I mean, I guess what I'm saying is I think it's going to become something that is more and more valuable because it will suffer. Like, it will go through a hardship.
Right.
Right. Where we were like, I actually can't afford to do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of going out to get my latte every day, I'm going to start making some at home.
Right.
And access to the right, whether it's the right bit of equipment or beans or know-how, it's a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure there is a trend for that, particularly, I would say, you know, with how hard things are squeezed in Australia, I'm sure there are a lot of people that are making more coffee at home than what they used to. And previously, it used to be instant coffee at mm-hmm. home, and you go out for espresso. Now, I'm sure you'll find there is most people have a nice coffee grinder at home and beans, and they grind fresh.
Mm-hmm.
Things have changed. We've gotten better understanding about what quality looks like, you know, to differentiate from, you know, what was average to what really good looks like. And so, yeah, there'll be a drop, but you will not get that excitement and the unknown and this, like, connectivity that we have as human beings at home. It won't be there. Not the same way it will be in a public setting where we can mm-hmm. interact. And so I guess what I'm saying is, you know, to your point, your favorite job ever as a barista. Mm-hmm. Oh, shit. It's fucking awesome.
Isn't it?
Also, I love being a barista. And I'm a really cheeky barista, and I really enjoy that. I love sharing. I love poking a bit of fun.
Yeah.
And I love making people smile.
Yeah.
It really, like, lights me up inside.
Me too.
The first time that I really, truly fell in love with coffee, and when people ask me my origin story of how did you start, it always goes back to the first cup that I made and sending it out to the table and seeing this lady grab this cup, have a sip, and like the eyes roll back and the sigh. And it something as simple as making someone a cup of coffee and just changing their day and their mood and just bringing something to them. I love that. It's really special. And I think if you're doing that, if you're out there in the world right now and you are out there bringing joy to someone's day and you're lifting them up and you're making a little special moment for them, you're adding value. You know, you're doing something that's always going to be appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
The opposite, right? When you don't fucking care and you're snooty and you're like, yeah, whatever, and what do you want? Sure. That is something that we don't need more of, you know, that might just stay at home.
Go find the thing that's going to bring you joy, because honestly, like, being a barista for me felt like this huge privilege that I got to stand at an espresso machine, and every morning this cohort of people, of all the espresso machines they could go to, chose my espresso machine.
Oh, yeah. It's really cool. I mean, same, like, I did a lot of DJing over the years,
yeah.
You know, and I really, same thing, like, most parties that I went to in my 20s, I was DJing at, you know, and it kind of, it helped me deal with the social anxiety of being at a party. I knew I had something to do, but I had to set a tone.
Yeah.
And it was really, I loved seeing people connect to that vibe that we're putting out. And mm-hmm. it really is my thing when we're hosting and allowing people to come into our home, our house, mm-hmm. we call it a shop, for business, but really it's like, for me, it was so much more than that. It was like, oh, this is a real true reflection of all the things that I love, and I want to share it with you, and come on in, let me show you why I love these things. I guess what I'm trying to say, Lee, is like, those things will become more and more valuable to us. The around the price, you know, like we started this conversation with like $100 a cup.
Mm-hmm.
I can understand why that sounds ridiculous. $10 for a loaf of bread compared to like $2, you know, like they're different things.
Right.
Cigars. I mean, you could really go crazy on a cigar if you want to. A bottle of whiskey, a bottle of wine.
Yeah.
The supercar that just drove past your apartment. We can get carried away.
Now, I'm in Dubai, so that's the reference that he's making there.
Is it a bad thing for coffee? Like, I can understand why it'd be like, oh, that's just ridiculous. Like, you know, when we had the winning lot last year from BOP, was $2,000 a pound. And there were several comments that were like, oh, yeah, I bet you they keep all the money and the producers get nothing. Well, it wasn't the case, actually. It kind of like it did trickle back, and there's quite a significant impact on the producers and what they're able to reinvest into. And I think that's the bit that, you know, when we keep coming back to this like coffee crisis, and you reference Ethiopia, and the challenges of people like finding other things that can get them cash in the hand a bit easier than coffee, and coffee disappearing. And how do we keep it around? The way we keep it around, Lee, is that we change people's perception of what the value of it is in the first place. How special of a beverage is it?
You mean the consumer?
Yeah, and I guess by that, I mean, I'm not saying it should all be this crazy price, but I'm saying it can be this crazy price. It can be something really special. And it's more understanding that there is more to coffee than it being roasted dark, having sugar added to it and milk poured over it. Right. You know, the days of us serving lattes from behind the espresso machine have evolved into more of a craft of like, no, here's its raw format. And check out the nuances that you can get from an incredibly complex drink that has not had things added to it. You know, it's just inherently delicious on its own merits. That has value. And I love challenging how valuable that can be, because it helps bring up other places like Honduras and El Salvador. El Salvador, we found five trees in 2015 on Maria Pax on her farm. She found these five trees on a new farm that she thought was geisha. And she emailed me. She's like, Nolan, hey, I think I found geisha on this new farm. And at the time, 2014, 2015, no one had geisha in El Salvador. No one had 90 plus coffee very easily in El Salvador. You know, El Salvador was something that we loved for espresso particularly. It was great. Good base, good blend, just good solid coffee. But not like, we were never thinking like, holy shit, wow, look what it can do. And she sends us this sample. I looked at it, I'm like, it's not geisha. We cupped it, and then I'm like, holy shit, Maria, I think you found geisha. It was so floral and creamy and incredible. And she showed very much like geisha. I went to El Salvador, spent time with Maria, and she was explaining how she'd only had 18 kilos available of these from these five trees. And we cupped them on the table. It was 2015. And she said to me, we cupped all these coffees, and I scored it like 90, 91 in that range. It was like super creamy vanilla, very floral, not crazy complex at that point, but just friggin' delicious. Mm-hmm. And she's like, Nolan, I really want you to have it. I'm like, Maria, I'd be honored to buy that copy. So what would you like to pay for it? And she put it on me, and she put it very generously on me, where she was just willing to listen to what I had to say. And so I had an opportunity to take advantage in that situation. And I knew that I was paying $3 to $4 a pound for most coffees from Maria at that time. Back of my mind, I knew that $5 a pound was probably going to get her pretty excited about this. It was more than we were paying for anything. But I also knew that I would pay $25 a pound for a Panama Geisha that scored 90 points, that tasted that creamy and that vanilla and that delicious. And I knew that I could sell Panama Geisha for $10 a cup all day long in Melbourne. At some like, Maria House, $25 a pound sound.
She's like, did she sit down?
Yeah, the door dropped. What are you talking about? Are you sure? And I'm like, well, why undervalue it? This is something really special. Let's put it on the consumer. I'm going to sell it for $10 a cup. Let's sell it as something really special because it is. And you know, magic happens when you do that. A month later, I get an email from my brother, Alfredo, and he's like, hey, Nolan, great news. We took three beans. We sent them to Italy. We had the DNA structure analyzed on that mysterious copy that we thought was geisha. Turns out it's not geisha. What did we just buy for $25 a pound? And it turned out that it didn't exist on the database for coffee at all.
It's a brand new varietal.
Yeah, it was 70% identical to geisha. It comes from Agaro in Ethiopia, and the closest varietal was Agaro 0.2 or something was the closest match to it. However, wow. Doesn't exist. What would you like to call it? And she named it Bernardina.
Okay.
After the farm manager, Roberto Bernardine Merce, that for years, like before she bought the farm, this guy had been trying to tell people, hey, there's these five trees. And no one really would listen because they would just get mixed into everything else. And so it's kind of a beautiful story around valuing something, you know, that's really special and paying what it's worth, and the consumer paying what it's worth. And here's what I kind of want to, here's what I want to point out for the consumer. When you go buy that $20 glass of wine or that expensive cocktail or that ancient grain, fire bait, you know, sourdough, the top shelf cigar, when you kind of reach to that, like, oh, I might treat myself to something special, you're rewarding yourself. You're doing something that's like special for you. It's about you treating yourself. You're going to have a special moment because you are honoring yourself in that moment. And so every now and then, it's nice to spoil ourselves. It's nice to have a nice holiday. It's nice to have a little splurge. Coffee deserves to be the same. We deserve to have opportunities to splurge, to have special moments, to really treat ourselves to it. And when the pandemic hit and we were all isolated and we're all kind of like in our little compartments and we couldn't even friggin' see each other's faces anymore, man, how sad and depressing and lonely. And suddenly the interest in these special products just for us lit up. People were like, I want something nice. And so I would like to encourage restaurant, you know, you're putting all this effort into the, as you mentioned, broccoli, the tomato, the, where the lettuce leaf comes from, where the beef is, how it's being handled, treated, how it's getting to you, how they take care of it to put it on the table. There is a setting there already that has people and an audience that is appreciating produce. Coffee deserves to be on that pedestal too, and to be appreciated and to be honored in that space. And so I'm on a bit of a mission to help take special coffee to other places, not to just the same path. I want more and more people to discover how special specialty coffee is and what it can be. And I really want to grow that segment of the industry for us, not just to fight against each other in this tiny space. Man, let's band together. Let's help each other out. Let's make the experience for the customer truly unique, and let's do a better job of explaining why it is different to not caring and to not paying attention.
So we've got to ask the hard question. And because I agree with everything that you've said, and I agree with the fact that, and I've pondered it quite a lot since we had a chat the other day about the $100 cup of coffee and the role that it plays in our industry. You know, there is, anytime I go into a cafe that I can clearly see is a specialty coffee cafe, if the barista is talented enough to be able to say to me, hey, do you want to try this really special coffee that we've got? And I think that you might enjoy it. This is what it's got to offer. I'm always going to say yes. And I'm hoping that someone who's not a specialty coffee person, who is a standard consumer that walks into that place every day, maybe once a month is going to treat themselves to a really special coffee. And we're banking on that, right? But the hard question is, can you build a profitable, viable business off that today?
I mean, when you ask that question, we're not saying, just to be clear, we're not saying everything on the menu is here.
No. We're saying that you have the $5 cup of coffee because that's the standard cup of price, right?
Because we have a philosophy, right, like around like making the space feel safe for everyone.
Yeah.
And accessible to everyone. And so there should be things on the menu that we can all kind of are within reach and we can all afford. And so coffee for us does not start there. It would start at $4, $5 a cup.
Right.
And that's US dollars. And there's a range. And so I really like to play with the consumer on range and what's available. Like I like to, the idea that I've got around coffee is that there is more to it than $3. And there's more to it than $100.
Right.
That there is a range of experiences that you can have. And so when I categorize coffee in my mind, I put it into, well, there are a bunch of mild coffees that exist in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And they tend to come, like I tend to lean on Brazil and Colombia and El Salvador for these mild, kind of chocolatey, well-balanced,
easy to drink, good standard kind of drink.
What I'd expect from coffee.
Yeah.
They tend to be more affordable.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't give you the super wow, but they'll give you a nice warm hug.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the curious range, and that is like maybe a wash Pacamara. You're starting mm-hmm. to get some really like interesting characteristics showing up. Not too crazy, but they're a little unique. And then we move into wilds, and so that has really helped me portray to the consumer, hey, there's a range of experiences that we can take you on here. And you can have your affordable, just give me a good regular cup of coffee. And for us, that would be in the US, drip coffee is like, that is the norm for an average cup, right? Like we didn't really have that in Australia so much. It's becoming a thing, but really it's the US had that happening well before espresso came about.
Yep.
Espresso came here in the 70s. So drip culture and diners, it's been around a hot minute, and it probably has been a very affordable thing to go get, like $2 a cup kind of scenario. I like to use that as a affordable cup to create either a mild or a more of a wild experience. And in a mild scenario, that drip coffee is probably going to be a Brazil.
Right.
Or an Ethiopian.
Right.
And I'm going to give the consumer the option to choose. Did you want the mild experience or the wild? Same price tag on that experience for the drip.
It's a gateway.
It's a gateway. And I want them to kind of just think a little bit that they can choose their mood.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll see on that same menu that there is a showcase. And that showcase is intended to be educational, intended to be an opportunity to dive deeper into a country or a farm, and particularly make it interesting for our staff, which mm-hmm. is super important that the staff are interested.
100%. Otherwise,
go how
find
are they
a job somewhere else.
Customer? Yeah. So we're trying to keep everyone engaged.
Yeah.
And I will always have an entry level coffee on those three coffees. That's pretty approachable in price, and it will come up. And I want to give the consumer again an opportunity to like, hey, you can feel safe to just get the entry level of those three. It's going to be an awesome experience. But if you'd like to see what the honey process is like, or the natural process is like, or the different varietal, sometimes it'll be a higher price tag. And I love seeing the consumer interact with these choices.
Mm-hmm.
It's super cool to be like, hey, I have an option to pick a journey here. Mm-hmm. And not everyone needs that. But I don't want to fall asleep on the people that do need that, Lee. I do not want to not offer it to those that are willing to spend, to those that can afford to spend, to those that are willing to explore how far can we go. Because there is a range, just like we talked about.
Mm.
There's a shadow too, right? There's a dark.
Yeah.
We need all of it, you know, and we need to be okay with all of it, the top and the bottom. And it'll always have a place. And I guess I where it works for me and where it's viable in our business and how I see it can work for others too, not just for us, is that you're creating special opportunities for some of your customers. Now, majority might just like to know that they're in the right place, that they're in the place that goes to extreme lengths. I don't need to go there. I just need a hug. But I know that I'm going to get a good hug because I'm in a place that takes it really seriously. It's kind of
and has
not everyone orders,
sustainable
not everyone orders
buying things. Practices, right? Like I want to get a hug and know that the place I'm buying my coffee from
yes,
is they're doing the right thing by the supply chain, and that's enough for me.
Yes, and I have absolutely seen that shift.
Yeah.
When our menu was laid out correctly and clearly, and I would see total coffee Neanderthals like read that menu, go for drip, but then be like, oh, pour overs. Okay. Whoa, high price tag. And it sparked some questions.
Curiosity.
Yeah. And that's great. Like I don't think I need to, we don't need to please everyone. But it don't need to be like, it doesn't need to be for everyone.
Mm.
And that's important. Like, it's important that you stand for what you believe and what you want to stand for, you know, because others will follow, and they'll follow at different levels. And so I kind of almost need to let go of also what people are going to think about you or what they think about you, because it also doesn't really matter. What matters is what you think about yourself. And so,
this podcast has been going for 8 years. If I focus on what other people thought and how many people were listening and how many views we got and what people were saying, it wouldn't have got past the first year.
Mm.
But I was building intentionally. I knew why I was building this. Very much like I watched you build Proud Mary's and I could see very clearly what your mission was to build Proud Mary's. You haven't wavered on that, Nolan.
Mm.
Even with all the fuckery that happened along the way, Proud Mary's is still what Proud Mary started as.
Mm.
This, it's got the same soul as what it started with.
Mm.
It's evolved and it's grown and but it's still the same soul.
Mm.
I feel like as we navigate this crisis, they're the businesses that are going to survive.
Mm.
They're not pretending to be something. Your business, sure. My business. A number of the businesses that we talk about on this podcast, and I don't have any financial stake in anyone's business except my own. But businesses that are built well have a kind of heart and a soul to them that people want to be around, whether it's the staff or whether it's the customer. Like I said, it's a special kind of crazy to build something like what we're building.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, we have one episode left. And this next episode is going to be on what the next phase of whatever the fuck is happening right now is going to be. So join us for the next episode, folks. Peace, love, and peanut butter. Have an amazing rest of your day. I really hope you enjoyed this episode, friends. Please don't forget to show us some love by subscribing, liking, commenting, and most of all, sharing this podcast with your friends. Check the show notes for links, including our sponsors and our Patreon. And stay tuned for more great conversations on the Daily Coffee Pro by Mapper Forward.